This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. The University of Cincinnati traces its roots to the founding of the Cincinnati Medical College by Daniel Drake in 1819. Over the last two centuries, the university, both through its graduates and its institutional initiatives, has touched and molded many aspects of the life in our region. To talk about the history of UC and the plans for next year's bicentennial, we are joined by the Associate Dean for Humanities and I love this, the Zane Miller Professor of History at the University of Cincinnati, David Stradling. All of us are students of Zane Miller, even though I never had him in a class, never went to UC, but he's fantastic, and it's a great title to have, David.
Yes, thank you.
And by the Director of Programs for the Community for Community Outreach for the UC Bicentennial, Danute Miskinis.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
To join our discussion, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Well, welcome. And, you're in that period of just getting ready for this big event. Now, 2019, when does it start? How long does it last? Danute, what's sort of the parameters of the bicentennial?
Perfect question to kick us off, and we are in the throes of madly planning ahead now. We've got a soft launch that's coming up this fall, so we'd like to invite all of you and all of our listeners to come to Homecoming, October 6th. We know you'll be celebrating with the King and Queen being announced and the kickoff party on Friday night and Saturday, parade and game. Should be a great event. We move into January as sort of the more official kickoff of the centennial year, January 15th through the 19th. We're calling it our charter week of events, and there'll be other things happening during that time that we can come back and discuss if we have time. We've got a community week coming up April 1 through 6 in 2019. Again, we want to invite the entire Cincinnati community to come and see how wonderful UC is. We can honor our past and elevate our present, especially with a wonderful faculty like David here, who's joined us this afternoon. Homecoming again repeats in 2019 of October, and then we close the bicentennial on November 9th with a signature gala event.
Okay. David, you've been commissioned, assigned. I'm not sure how this happens inside the university. You're writing a history of the university entitled In Service to the City, A History of the University of Cincinnati. With an institution that sprawls in so many directions and over the last two centuries has sprawled in a lot more directions than people can even see today, how do you get a handle on it? And I got a feeling the first part of that title, In Service to the City, is the theme that you're working through. But tell me a little bit about that.
That's right. When I first started doing the work, and I'd say something shy of being commissioned to do it. I was given support by the institution, but it was made clear to me that I would have free rein over the content of the book and the scope of the book and the arguments that the book would make. And that was absolutely essential to the funders of the book. They wanted this to be truly a scholarly effort.
Who's going to publish?
It's going to be published by UC Press.
Okay.
And so it will be part of the first wave of books coming from our brand new university press at UC that's housed in UC libraries. So I'm really happy about that. They're the perfect publisher for this book. Obviously, it will be largely a regional market. But back to your
original
question about the how do you get a handle on this sprawling institution? I took a thematic approach. I'm an urban historian by training, and so I was very much interested in the role of higher education in the city of Cincinnati itself. And so I took the approach of investigating the many ways in which the university had connections to the broader community, not just through educating students, not just through the money that it spent directly by employing staff and faculty, but by the many ways in which its research affected directly the communities in Cincinnati. But also, it's not, obviously a completely positive story. So there are instances where you see is obviously the gorilla in the neighborhood and has the ability to take over neighboring lands. And much of Quarryville was felled to make space for a growing campus. Much of Avondale was felled to make way for an expanding
university hospital. We're not talking about felling the trees. We're talking about
actually demolishing the homes.
That's right.
Yep. And Burnett Woods itself was shrunk quite a bit. It's about half its size as it was originally because UC, at the time, a municipal university. And so very much a part of the mission of the city of Cincinnati to serve its residents. Thought that an expanding campus was more valuable than a large city park.
You know, one of my observations in the research that I've done over the years is that especially in the period of the 1920s and 30s, after the charter reform in the city, here was the city-owned university. And if you go to the city manager's reports, that every year you find out what the university, what it was delivering, what it was involved with through the city manager's reports. And that sort of tends to taper off. How significant is it that it moved from a city-owned university to a state-owned university in the 1960s?
I think your depiction of it tapering off is exactly right. It's we might think of 1977 as being this incredible watershed moment where a municipal university is transformed legally into a state institution. But really, it was a process that was underway for many decades that over time, fewer and fewer people who went to the University of Cincinnati actually lived inside of the city boundaries. Far fewer, a smaller percentage of Cincinnatians lived in the city of Cincinnati. So this makes sense. It's serving a suburban and regional community long before it becomes a state institution. And of course, as you might imagine, as education becomes more expensive, the equipment that's necessary to train students in everything from medicine to engineering becomes more expensive. The city of Cincinnati simply cannot support an institution of higher learning like a research one institution like we have now.
And this isn't unique to the city of Cincinnati.
Absolutely.
City universities really became state universities almost everywhere.
Yeah.
College of New York is
That's the last one.
That's the last one, right?
And in fact, many people complain about its devolution, right, that the city of New York cannot support CUNY in the way that it used to. I mean, higher education is simply expensive, and that means that you have to have a broad base of support.
Danute, one of the interesting things to me in this whole theme that David is developing about the relationship of the university to the community is that one of the programs of the Bicentennial, as I understand it, is something called Pay It Forward, a community engagement grants to – it seems to me that that's trying to strengthen that tie again. Is that – am I right?
Yes, you're very, very right. And it's something that that we are very, very proud of at UC. Of course, it follows President Pinto's new strategic direction in focusing on urban impact. I think it also, everything that we're doing with the community is unique to the University of Cincinnati. As we've researched other universities and what they've done for the Bicentennial, this is a question that came to me very casually, actually, from a person who was interviewing for a job at UC who said, well, how is your Bicentennial different? And I realized then when she asked the question and I thought about our many programs that our community outreach is what's going to be different. So to move to your very specific question about the community grants, there's up to $100,000 that's being offered. The request for proposals have already gone out to over 300 organizations in the city. They need to qualify as being nonprofit and being of service to the city of Cincinnati. This Pay It Forward engages students in what hopefully will be a 3-year program. It's part of the request that says, how do you keep this program rolling so it's not just something that happens.
Is this a one grant of $100,000 or multiple grants?
They're multiple grants. Sorry,
okay.
I didn't make that clear. Yeah, they're the grants range from $1,000 to $10,000.
Okay.
So, and an organization can apply for up to two. They have different purposes, different causes, different things that they want to support.
So, but
we're very
excited. You want to link the students into this.
The students are linked into this, yes, as part of paying it forward, the idea of paying it forward and part of our community learning initiative.
David, back to history. You and I, we can stick with this all the time. One of the interesting things about the University of Cincinnati, I mentioned the 1819 date is really the founding of the medical college by Daniel Drake. But there are other independent institutions which ultimately got gathered in by the University of Cincinnati. The Cincinnati Conservatory of Music becomes the College Conservatory of Music. The College of Pharmacy starts as an independent institution. Ohio Mechanics Institution comes in. It becomes the College of Applied Sciences. How typical is that when you look at, and I'm sure you've looked at comparable city institutions founded in the late 19th, early 20th century, how comparable is that?
I think it's actually fairly rare, in part because, I mean, given the diversity of the institutions that come into the University of Cincinnati, but in large part, take, for example, the land-grant colleges like Ohio State, they are born well-funded and their mission is fairly well-established from the get-go. The University of Cincinnati, I think, is – and many of the institutions that come into it are in a constant struggle for the funding that they need to do the things that they want to do. And a part of the advantage of bringing together the diverse faculty and all of these different kinds of separate institutions and missions is that there is, in essence, a strength in numbers. There's an ability to serve students better, a little bit more efficiently. And that's, I think, what people are really looking for. Interestingly enough, the conversation about gathering all of these units together begins at the very start, 1870, when the University of Cincinnati itself was created by the state, allowed the city of Cincinnati to create a municipal university. The conversation already had been around, well, can we join the Cincinnati Law School? Can we ask the medical colleges to join us? Even conversations about some of the sophisticated high schools joining the University of Cincinnati, simply because you wanted to have that intellectual gathering and the med students learning from the chemistry professors and whatnot.
That, I hadn't thought about this, but you gave me a fat ball right down the center of the plate here. How much interaction is there between colleges? This is especially in a university the size of UC.
Yeah.
How much do the historians talk to the people in DAAP and collaborate on projects and find ways to work together?
Well, I'll be completely honest. It is hard because it's a big institution, but it happens. Sometimes it happens accidentally, which that serendipity of being on the same campus and recognizing people have similar interests. But sometimes it happens very intentionally. This coming semester, I'll be working on a UC Forward grant, as they call them. It's an effort to get students in interdisciplinary classroom settings. And as a historian, I'll be teaching a course on the history of the uptown area, Avondale and Coryville, at the same time that a planning professor is working on the intersection of Reading Road and Martin Luther King, where there's lots of development going on, and an environmental studies professor will be teaching a course at the same time that we can all interact with, focusing on issues of transportation and public health.
And all that's focused on a very important part of the city.
Absolutely.
So it's that connection to the city again. Mm-hmm. The new day.
Just adding on to what David was talking about, some of the collaboration that goes on, the Bicentennial certainly wants to highlight that, how it happens at UC. So previously I'd mentioned that during April 1 through 6 of 2019, we're going to be having Community Week. Mm-hmm. And some of the items that will be featured then are research and innovation. So that will bring faculty together from various, from all across the campus, of course, all of our campuses, not just Clifton, but of course, Blue Ash and Claremont. We're going to be having an equity and inclusion conference going on that week. We're going to have the Distinguished Alumni Celebration, which is one of our regular alumni events. And of course, that features also Alumni Weekend. So this is a one area where the Bicentennial is collaborating, is highlighting what we have in existence, because we have a wonderful, wonderful university in our midst, and it's important for us to share that with everybody out there.
I suspect, Anute, you haven't had a chance to read the David's manuscript yet, but is there something you're really hoping he talks about? There's something that you love personally?
She better say that she's read it because she's had it for quite some time.
Oh, okay.
You have read it. He's putting me away, and I've just started it. He's putting me now under an embarrassing situation. So, it's right next to my bedside.
One page a night, go to sleep. But is there...
It's very dense. I will say this. It's full of good information.
Historians.
Mm-hmm. I don't think she means to say dense.
thick. It's a doorstop.
Good knowledge. Filled with important
But facts. Aside from whatever's in his tome, is there something about the university that you just love that you think maybe people who haven't been students there, live in the area, ought to be aware of?
I think we're one of the best kept secrets in Cincinnati. My position in the as part of the bicentennial team has brought me to know someone, get to meet someone like David, to meet some of the other faculty that are engaged in other projects that we're doing, like the Legacy Committee, which is run by two faculty members, David Harkness and Tracy Herman. These people are fabulous to work with, intelligent in their own right in terms of what their academic responsibilities are, but they're also engaged in other activities as well. We've got I don't even know where to begin, but we've got lots of gems.
Okay.
Lots of gems at UC that need to be focused on.
David, as you did your research, is there something that it was like, wow, when you found something? I did the history of Otterbein College probably 15 years ago, and I ran into in their archives two letters written within one day after and a couple days later of a graduate who had moved to Japan and was reporting her first impressions of what she had heard about the atomic bomb being dropped.
Wow.
She doesn't even have a name for it. She calls it an electron bomb. And it was like that made that whole project just alive for me. Is there something like that for you?
I think my favorite experience in doing the research was actually reading Charles Dabney's papers, which are mostly held at the University of North Carolina, where he finished his career.
And who's Charles Dabney?
Charles Dabney was a professor the president of UC for most of the first two decades of the 20th century. I think he was a transformative president. He was really at the helm when many of the colleges that we now think of as being core to the mission of the University of Cincinnati were created, including the Business College and the Engineering College. He was at the helm when the cooperative education was invented.
Which really is unbelievable, and it's
yes.
changed education all over the world.
Absolutely. And I got to say, I think that's the one thing that, you know, as I was doing this research and reading lots of other histories of higher education, some of them general histories of higher education in the United States, almost never does the University of Cincinnati get mentioned. And I think this is largely speaks to the coastal bias of academia in the United States. It speaks to a bias against urban institutions and institutions like UC that tend to serve very diverse populations, incredibly diverse populations. But to leave out that the cooperative education system was invented at the University of Cincinnati and I would say has been incredibly successful and replicated in colleges not just here but
all over the world.
All over the world. Speaks to kind of the depths of the biases against institutions like UC.
As a matter of fact, speaking of all over the world with co-op education, UC is hosting during August of 2019 the World Conference of Co-op Education. They'll be on our campus.
That is absolutely perfect.
Isn't it wonderful?
With the bicentennial.
Yes.
I mean, that is the thing that pops out. Dean Schneider, when he did that, he had to basically promise the board they could have his job if it didn't work after the first year. He risked a lot personally on that. Is there going to be space to talk about the future of higher education in the bicentennial?
Actually, I'll give you a qualified yes because it's conversations that we're having, one that we just had yesterday. We're talking to various colleges about how we position that topic.
And I would like to have all of the conversations that we have about the past of the university to encourage us to reflect on the way that the university interacts with the community right now and how we'd like to see the institution evolve in the future.
A good historian is always focused on the future, not just on the past. I want to thank David Stradling, Danuta Miskinis, and you could probably tell we're all three pretty good friends. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstrow. Archives of our programs are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley. Stay tuned to 91.7 for Here and Now, coming up next on NPR.